Ask Catherine. We got a lot of questions this week. Dear Catherine, I read with great interest the article you recently posted from Rambus Chartology, making their case in predicting what would become a total collapse in the value of precious metals. This made me realize that with so many people believing in recent years that the collapse of the dollar was imminent, and still hasn't happened, that many precious metal investors may finally decide that it's time to begin unloading their metals. What are your thoughts on what was mentioned with Rambus? The article was really about the possibility of another leg down before the primary trend reasserted, so it was not about the collapse of precious metals. It was simply the fact that the author in question, a very good article, did not see the primary trend reasserting in the near future, but figured that there's a very good chance of one more leg down. I agree with that. It's what Franklin and I talked about during the precious metals market report. If that does happen, again, it's very important you not sell your core position. If you have an investment position as opposed to a core position, you just want to be careful whether you want to ride it down through that. But it's absolutely a distinct possibility. The question is, this summer, will we break the 1200 line? Anybody's guess is as good as mine. What is good news is a Gallup poll released, I think, today shows that a survey of Americans about their favorite investments, 30% favor real estate, 24%, this is tied, for stocks and gold. Gold's come down since the high in 2011, and stocks have ridden as the S&P and the developed world markets have improved. Bonds are in the basement, and given the outlook on interest rates, we're going to have a lot of money moving out of the bond market or out of bank deposits, and they're going to have to go into risk assets. Real estate, of course, for many people, being their favorite local investment. What's interesting about this is if you look across all of these asset classes, real estate, stocks, and gold, what the survey is saying is people want to invest in what's called risk assets. So they're walking away from bonds and from bank deposits. Now, if interest rates should rise, that can always change around. But it's a good sign when people want to invest in real assets, and which I think this shows. So I think, you know, if anything, what we're doing is we're building a new base. If you look at the ownership of coins, it's become much more widely distributed during this consolidation since 2011. And it means that there's going to be a much bigger and much wider base for the precious metals market when the primary trend reasserts, which I believe it will. I give it about 80% chance. Is it possible we're in a bear market for a long, long time? Yes, anything's possible. But again, I expect the primary trend to reassert. And part of it is, if you look at where Mr. Global wants to go with currencies, there's going to be too much demand, particularly in China and India, for gold, a gold-based currency. So if you want to get everybody on a digital currency, you better come up with a virtual currency that can be combined with gold. And it's, you know, if anything, it's going to be the most unbelievable fiat currency in the world. Dear Catherine, in addition to the movie Second Opinion that you're reviewing, and this was last week, and let's get the movies, I also recommend the movies Brzezinski and Cancer, The Forbidden Cures, which are outstanding movies on curing cancer, too. Both of these movies are available in DVD and can be seen on YouTube also. Yes, I've seen the first, which is made by the same producer who made Second Opinion, which is the movie we reviewed last week. It's on the suppression of information about Laetrile. I haven't seen Cancer, The Forbidden Cures, and I look forward to looking at that. In addition, last year in the Salieri Report, John Rappaport recommended the book Politics and Healing by Daniel Haley, and after reading this book, because of John's recommendation, I can honestly say it's the most important book I've read. I've gotten it, but I haven't read it yet. I clearly need to. Hi, Catherine. Thank you for all you and your staff's hard work in bringing the Salieri Report to us. I have two questions. First, you said that the 3D printing looks to be a major trend for the future. Do you have any companies in this space that you consider worthy investments? I'm not allowed to give investment advice as a regulated investment advisor. I have to make all recommendations like that within a regulatory relationship, which I cannot do on the Salieri Report. If you look at the study that we published on 3D, we did a Salieri Report on 3D printing. It goes through many of the major companies and not-for-profit organizations in lots of the different spaces within 3D printer from hardware to software. And if you want to get names of companies, you know, many searches on the internet are there will give you sort of an idea of who's doing what. I do think there are companies in this area that are good investments. Right now, if you look at the stocks, the strong growth stocks, they've been trading off significantly. And in addition, we're long overdue for a correction. So I would be careful when you buy, you know, because with these stocks, when they run up, they can run up quite high and then trade off. They're very volatile. So take a look at their histories before you decide what you do. But I would be very careful about when you buy. And of course, you want one of the ones that's going to hang in for a long time or get bought up. Second, you have said that nothing happens without the metastructure allowing it to happen. With that in mind, why do you think they are allowing a program like Coast to Coast with George Norrie to exist and reach such a large audience? It's a combination of reasons. One is that Art Bell built that show up, and then it was sort of taken over and corporatized. If you look at the people who own Coast to Coast, it's basically sort of Harvard endowment and related network money, I think, that's controlling the corporate investment of Premier Radio, which is basically the owner of the show. It was purchased from a group in Texas many years ago. What you'll see is allowing that network to exist is a way of letting off steam. By keeping it late at night and adding the paranormal and the UFO, you try and keep it sort of marginalized, or that worked for a while. But the other thing is, if you look at who Coast to Coast has a lot of hours of content to provide, and if you look at also gets into the stream, you know, it's people who are promoting, you know, sort of the official story in a variety of different ways. So it's a very wide basket. There's a mix of stuff. And the very interesting thing about the Coast to Coast audience is they are very discerning, very intelligent, and their attitude is, you know, no problem. I know how to get what I want. I know how to listen, pick, filter, you know, bring it all on, and I'll filter out the good stuff and ignore the other stuff. And so, you know, so it's kind of a compromise between the Mr. Global and everybody else. And if anything, it's a two-way communication device. So, you know, I find Coast to Coast to be a very useful radio show. What I didn't understand when I first got on Coast to Coast was the incredible importance of the UFO phenomena to what was happening in communities and politics. And it was something that Coast to Coast educated me to. I will tell you that if you look at the producers of Coast to Coast, given the flow of information they've handled over the years, it's quite extraordinary, their knowledge of what's going on in the world and their sort of interaction with millions of people all over the world who listen and follow them. So it's a very rich flow, and I must tell you, it's a wonderful audience. I love the people who listen to Coast to Coast, and I'm always amazed, no matter where I am or what I'm doing, when I discover who in the world is listening to Coast to Coast. Another question, what do you think of the divest Monsanto effort? I think it's I always believe that any opportunity we have to align our time, our money, our attention with our values is good. I haven't looked closely at that group, and I don't know anything about them. But I do think one of the ways to deal with someone like Monsanto is clearly communicate through the marketplace. What will happen to gold and silver if war occurs? My expectation in most war-like situations is the price will fall, will be very deflationary in the short run for gold and silver. What will happen to other markets' holdings if war occurs? Depends. Generally, what you'll see is money rush into the dollar and the treasury, so people look for safe havens, but it really depends on what kind of war you're talking about. Next question. Is it possible there could be a subscriber's luncheon during the time you're in San Mateo in June? Great idea. We're going to take a look at that. Thank you for that idea. There's going to be a lot going on that weekend, but it would be very fun to do if we could. Next question. Good gosh, Catherine, I just realized that you did know Michael Rupert and you knew him well. I'm very sorry, Catherine, that you lost a friend. The person writing is referring to the fact that Michael Rupert, who was the proprietor of a website called Collapse, former LA policeman and narcotics investigator, committed suicide this last week. In 1998, there were three people really concerned with or illuminating drug trafficking in communities. One was Mike Rupert, who has now committed suicide. One was Gary Webb, who was said to commit suicide, but I believe was assassinated. And the third was me. And I, when informed of Mike's suicide, it really sort of inspired me to sit down and think about the last 10 years. Mike and I had stopped collaborating many years ago, and I've steered clear of him for many years because I found his behavior to be erratic, and I lost trust in him in a variety of different ways. Looking back, I realized that, you know, there were many people who helped me and many things that went right for me so that I didn't end up assassinated like Gary Webb or depressed like Mike Rupert. And listening to the reports of his death really got me to take stock and say, I have a lot to be grateful for. And one of the things I'm most grateful for is for the subscribers who provide me and my team a revenue flow in exchange for telling them the truth. It's a huge blessing to be able to work at what we do. And I'm extremely grateful for that, and I thank you for your support. So it's a time to stay, take stock, and say, there, but for the grace of God, go I. Another question to add something positive. I'm so looking forward to the Secret Space Conference. That one is the conference, no, at the end of June with Catherine, Dr. Farrell, Richard Dolan, etc. They go on to describe reasons why. You can see this comment posted at the blog. Thank you for your positive attitude that keeps us going and learning. God bless you. Thank you. A comment related to the Bundy standoff, wanting to know, could you please comment on the BLM standoff in Nevada? This cuts through so many of your themes. It's time for a comprehensive annual financial reports equivalent regards the wealth of the world. What do the extraction industries know that we do not? See my commentary musings on the news. I do comment on the Bundy situation. The questioner goes on. For example, I remember a story of the shuttle images mapping forests in the U.S. Forest Service assessing from the data that companies had to be harvesting more lumber than they'd been accounting for in permits and fees. There must also be a dispute about unpaid rent for grazing rights, but it also has a huge distraction factor. It dragged in a lot of people, and Stuart R. at Oath Keepers commented on the presence of active serving office holders. As with the Social Security clawback of benefits from a child decades later, in one sense, it is the dying sector of the economy just desperately trying to hang on. There must be suitors for the land who want to pay more, and the BLM is trying to obtain that. Is this not an example along the lines of not paying your taxes or filing properly? You're just breaking the law. The situation at Bundy is more complex, and you can spin stories on either side. I would have to dig down very deep and spend a lot of time to really sit down and understand exactly what's going on and who has right on which parts of their side. I do think it's important to understand that the federal government can use environmental laws in a situation like this and the application of rents to try and assert a sovereignty that they really don't have and to make life very expensive and ultimately make the targeted party look wrong. Remember, we are providing them with tax money. They're not providing us with tax money. So we're basically paying them to do things that eat up our time and make it easy for them to sort of outfight us. Now, I don't know all the particulars in this situation. I don't think the people involved are part of a dying economy. If they die, we die. Our freedom depends on an independent food supply, which depends on independent ranchers farmers and food distributors, and if their water and land can be destroyed and taken and centralized under central control, then, you know, we're all part of the dying economy. So I think we have a tendency to make groups like this look like they're part of one small group. But if you look at the issues going on at the heart of the matter, this is all of us. This is really about the law. If you look at the economics that is causing the U.S. government to assert control over great swaths of land, whether it's energy, whether it's food, whether it's the Agenda 21 issues, all of those economic drives and political drives are driven by the need for money, and it's clear we've been harvesting the whole economy for decades. I, for one, think the way to fight back on this is to assert demands for the missing money. There's $4 trillion missing from the federal government. There is a refusal to produce audited financial statements as required by law. There is clear noncompliance with the Constitution. To me, if you want to really fight these things, what you're going to have to do is go to court and demand an escrow locally for federal tax money on the theory that we have an obligation to assert authority over the money because the money is being spent outside the Constitution and the law. So I think there's some really jump-the-curve legal strategies to use, and rather than being many little groups picked off, we're going to have to get deeply into the money. And another thing I talk about in the musing on the news commentary is the importance and the incredible opportunity, rather than fighting over these issues in a very ugly way, let's get down into the dirt and start re-engineering the flows of funds in places, because there's great wealth to be created. And, you know, it's the old Tina Turner question. We can do this nice or rough. What's happening at the Bundy Ranch is rough, and there's a nice way to do it.